many Norwegians who emigrated to America, it was a journey full of heartache and sacrifice, but also one of hope for a better life, and that one day they would be reunited with the family they left behind. On the reality TV series Alt for Norge, 12 Norwegian-Americans trace their ancestry and come face-to-face with the people and places of their family's past.
In 2015, our friend David Engen snatched the crown on Season 6 of Alt for Norge to become the oldest and gayest contestant ever to win the series. David's own life has been a tremendous journey. He was a Lutheran minister married to a woman and had kids, but then later came out as gay. He's now happily married to his husband, Greg, and lives in Minnesota.
Today, David Engen joins us to talk about how, at the age of 62, he survived his great Norwegian adventure when most contestants were in their 20s.
Plus, why Norwegians are fascinated with getting Americans to cuss in their language.
And how to turn the nothing away before it's too late. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun.
Feast of Fun is made possible because of fabulous people just like you. Thank you. Unlock a delicious world of podcasting magic and listen to thousands of amazing shows at feastoffun.com/plus.
Hello.
Hi there. Is this David Engen?
This is David Engen.
David, it's Mark Fillion.
Hi, David. It's Fausto.
Hi, guys. How are you doing?
We're doing pretty good. I'm so excited to be able to talk to you. It was a thrill to meet you when we went up to Minneapolis for our viewing party for Season 9 of Alt for Norge. I'm so happy and honored that you showed up.
Well, listen, how would I miss seeing another fellow star, a Norwegian television star? We're a rare breed. We are a different kind of breed altogether.
We don't come along very often, do we?
We do not, and the world is waiting to hear from us. I believe this.
Well, congratulations on winning your season. It is yet to be revealed whether I win Season 9 or not. Otherwise, I would ask you for advice on how to win, but everything's already in the can, so...
Well, I understand that, but I'm still hoping for you. I don't care what the future brings. I will consider it as stolen if you don't win.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate that.
I feel the same way, David. Although I have to say, when we were watching your season 6, and I saw you on the first episode, I was like, I will break the TV set if this man doesn't win. I was going to get mad. And you were, I think, up for elimination, too, in the beginning, weren't you?
Oh, well, it was like episode 5 or 6, something like that. Yeah, it was on language. And they made us say these phrases, most of them dirty, in Norwegian, that we were supposed to then repeat word for word perfectly to a professor of Norwegian. And, of course, it was the worst. You know, I had just had a cold, so I couldn't hear for anything. And for all I knew, they were just saying, rah, 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 and I was supposed to repeat this back.
Because you didn't speak, and you don't speak Norwegian.
No, I do not. I the only words I know are from my Norwegian grandparents, and those were things that were also dirty.
So the dirty things that you said to the people, did you understand what it was?
Oh, no, not at the time. Mm-hmm. Absolutely not.
And you found out later?
I found out later, and I asked them what was wrong with these people that they liked to make, you know, these poor, innocent little Americans, because I am an innocent little American. And they made us say these horrible things, which I guess are just sort of part of the common vernacular over there. Mm-hmm. They are a rough and untamed people, Mark.
Our people are rough and untamed.
They are. They are very much so.
But they do have socialized medicine, so that's a good thing. Well, the weird thing about my experience when I was there, too, is like every Norwegian would come up to you and be like, what dirty words do you know? Or what did they teach you? I'm like, nobody's taught us anything. What can you teach us? And they would all giggle back. Oh no, I could never tell you anything like that. And it was all the time. They would always come up to us, ask us what dirty words we know, and we'd beg them to teach us, and they would refuse.
Well, you know, you've got to get rid of that Sunday school boy face of yours, for one thing. They're not going to try to, ruin you. That's just not going to happen. Oh, no, they had no problem with that. In fact, I told one of the crew members what my grandmother would say, and she looked at me, kind of blinked her eyes three times and said, there was something wrong with your grandmother that she said that to you.
What did your grandmother, your Norwegian grandmother?
My Norwegian, very Norwegian grandmother, yes. What did she say?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let's see. Well, I can't remember what it was in Norwegian, but it was something to, she spoke to her sister once and talking about her girl parts being all dried up, which was really gross. And then my grandma would say, let's go to church right after that. So it was just, it was weird. It was very weird upbringing I had. And I learned all the words for things like shit and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And yeah, it was an interesting education I had.
I guess we always hear about Americans have this puritanical background, and that's why we're so hung up on cuss words and sexuality. And people from other cultures like Norway don't have that. So they're just comfortable with all this.
They are. They do not see it as a big deal. Like nudity, it's no big deal. In the United States, we're so hung up on things like that. We have if you tell everybody everything that they're doing is wrong, you have an institution that says everything that you do or think is wrong, that way they got control over you. And I think that's what's happened. You know, I'm a person of faith. I'm not going to go full on, you know, destroy the church, but the church has done some really nasty stuff to people, making them feel badly about their bodies, badly about sex, badly about anything they think. And if you got people feeling badly, you can control them. Well, the Norwegians and other Scandinavian countries and other nations, for that matter, don't buy it. They don't get into it. They just say, you know, we're human beings first and foremost. And countries in Europe, too, have been through so much. They've been through war. They've been through hunger, unlike what this country has been. They can't afford to be all pissy all the time, like we try to be here in the United States. So, I got to calm down.
Preach.
David, what religion were you a former minister of?
Lutheran, the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America.
Okay, so last night, Mark and I were watching The Neverending Story. And at the end of the movie, the demon dog that's like representing evil is talking with the hero, Atreyu, who's all the kids in this movie are gender nonconforming. So it's a film that appeals to a lot of trans kids and people, right?
Oh, interesting. Okay.
There's like a million young trans men named Bastion or Sebastian.
And a lot of them got their name from that show.
Now, it's really unusual if you find a trans guy named Atreyu, but so the evil dog demon Gmork is talking with Atreyu about the nature of hope and despair. It's very philosophical. It's a very dark film, and I want you to weigh in on this because as a recovering Lutheran, right?
Right.
So the dog says to the boy, "Foolish boy, don't you know anything about Fantasia? It's the world of human fantasy. Every part, every creature that comes from it is a piece of the dreams and hopes of mankind. Therefore, Fantasia has no boundaries." Atreyu responds, "But why is Fantasia dying then?" "Because people have begun to lose their hope and forget their dreams, so the nothing, the darkness, grows stronger." "What is the nothing?" "It is the emptiness that is left. It is despair, destroying the world, and I have been trying to help it." "But why would you do such a thing?" "Because people who have no hopes are easy to control, and whoever has control has the power."
Oh, absolutely.
I felt like this could have been written today.
Oh, of course it could. Anything from literature, film, whatever art genre you're talking about, anything that has depth is constantly applicable. It's always going to be applicable. Yeah. And the things that you see, you know, we human beings are just not as smart as we think we are. We keep repeating the same damn mistakes over and over again. And so literature and everything else has to keep responding to it over and over again, saying like, okay, kids, let's try this one more time and see if you get it this time.
Why are people so offended nowadays? I mean, we've been hearing that since I was a child, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like, everybody's always offended.
Well, that's, you know what that is? Here's my opinion. And my opinion is always correct, so please keep this in mind as I speak. But what people are offended all the time is they don't have to defend themselves then. They don't have to think. If all I am is offended, I don't have to do anything to describe to you why I feel the way I do or tell you why I disagree with you. All I have to do is, you know, clutch my pearls and gasp and walk off. You know, that's not a conversation. That's an escape. And I think that's the problem with this I'm always offended thing. Well, if you're offended, you should probably think about why you're so offended. And I don't believe it. I don't buy it.
A lot of activists say that you shouldn't use the word offensive. They should use the word harmful and describe why you think this action or what somebody has said is harmful.
Oh, yeah, that's a totally different thing. Mm-hmm. If it's harmful versus offensive, that's a totally different thing. Two different words. Mm-hmm. And then I think I agree with you, Mark. I think then they would have to be more deliberate in their choice of words, you know, because being harmful is so much more deliberate than something that's simply offensive. Mm. So that's a good call, I think.
Harvey and Milk said, though, you got to have hope in order to make the world a better place.
Absolutely. Hope is the essence of humanity. And hope is where creativity comes as well. And if we didn't have hope, why be creative? Why invent? Why do anything? We would still be sitting down in a river, scratching ourselves and building things with rocks. You know, we wouldn't be as developed as we are. Art wouldn't come from that. Medicine, all the things we do, if we didn't have some kind of hope and think and the belief that, well, we could do something else. We could we could actually create something new. That's the essence of hope.
Is that what drew you to wanting to audition for this very obscure reality TV show in Norway?
Well, in part, yes. I was at a point in my life where I had just gotten into a healthy relationship. And as when you approach health, you start seeing things about yourself that you actually like and stop only focusing on the things you don't. And so I started taking risks and wanted to do something a little bit more fun and more inventive, more creative with my life. And so, yes, that's why I decided to audition for this show. And I think I told you when we talked once before that I had no designs on winning this show. Absolutely none. I thought it would last 2 or 3 weeks, and then they would send the old guy back home in a box. You know, my own daughter.
Because you are the oldest winner of All for Norway out of 9 seasons.
That is correct, my son. I am. Yes.
Did you see what Mark said in the beginning of the season? They didn't ask any of the other contestants about their age. They asked Mark about his age.
Yes.
And what did you say?
I said I learned a long time ago that age is just a little number you sometimes have to lie about. But if you ask, I'm 51.
Yeah.
And I had to do it practically at gunpoint. Like, they came to my hotel room. I'm sitting there in Newark. I got bit by a dog, so I had this horrible dog bite on my leg. I'm sitting in bed, and then they're like, we need you to do a little video for us and tell us how old you are. I'm like, okay. And I had to do 2 takes.
Well,
so maybe that will come into play later. We'll see. I don't know.
We'll see. Yeah. I think age is, I think they like the older people who are a little more seasoned and don't react quite so, excitedly or whatever to some of the things that go on. I mean, some of the younger people, they're just, you know, they're always very reactive. Their expectations are such that I think that sometimes expectations are not very realistic. But as I told people, the reason I won the show is because old age and treachery will always be youth and skill.
I love you so much.
That's so funny.
When I found out that you won, I stood up and cheered, yes, good triumphs over evil. Because it's so off-putting seeing all these, like, you know, basically real world Miami people that get cast on these shows, you know? And I'm just like, I want to see interesting people. I don't want to see pretty faces. You know what I'm saying? I can look at porn if I want, you know what I'm saying? And I do like a mixture of diversity, and I feel like Alt for Norga has more of that than some of these other throwaway shows. RuPaul's Drag Race. You know, where it would kill them if they had somebody over the age of 50 on their show. You know, they would literally die inside and crawl into a ball and
Well, they did have Charlie Hides.
Yeah, and what? How soon did they get rid of him? And how demoralizing was that for Charlie?
Oh, yeah.
Charlie doesn't even want to do interviews.
Mm.
Can you imagine what these people who that foist that kind of idea on other people, the ones that are pushing that idea, what kind of hell are they going to live with when they start to see things that, that gravity is causing to their body? I mean, mm-hmm. they're going to freak. They're going to totally freak out and wonder, you know, I'm this close to death or whatever. You know, I'm 63 years old and I feel like I'm just getting going. And not to sound cliche, but I do. That's how I feel. I think I did get that also from my Norwegian grandma, though. Speaking of grandma, when she was like 92 years old, I called her one day and said, "How you doing, grandma?" She says, "Oh, I'm a little tired today." And I said, "Well, how come?" She goes, "Well, I was out shoveling snow." And I went, "Good God, grandma, you've got adult great grandchildren. Have them come up and shovel snow." She goes, "Well, you know, I forget how old I am." And I love that.
Well,
and
if you don't use it, you lose it.
Exactly. And so this idea that there is this peak time of life, yeah, your health might be mm-hmm. peak. Yeah, you might be at peak as far as energy goes and capabilities go physically, whatever. But the human brain is such a resilient organ and creativity is never leaves us. So I just, this age thing is somebody else's worry, not mine.
It's a shame that we have our numerical system is based on our fingers, 10.
Mm-hmm.
And so every 10 years, we have some sort of a crisis. Like people who turn 20, suddenly they're like, "My life is over." And then they're 30, "My life is over." My 40, when my father turned 70, he sat us down at a McDonald's and bought us like everything we wanted to eat. And it was like a scene from Breaking Bad when Walter White is about to leave his family to murder everyone, you know?
Right.
And he just looks at us really sternly and says, "You know what, children, I'm dying." And we're like, "Oh my God, Dad has cancer or something." He's like, "No, he's just dying in a broader sense of the word." My father didn't die until like 30 years later after that speech, but we were just like, our mouth full of...
He was preparing you for his eventual death, because he was old when he had you.
He was old when he had us, and he literally spent his entire life talking about his death. And
would
drive us to the funeral home that he was going to have. He would show us the coffins. Like, it was kind of macabre, you know? And so he made me promise him when he died... I was 14 years old to have a camera and photograph him in his coffin.
suddenly I understand you so much better.
I'm glad you do.
And so this is why I studied and learned photography throughout my life in some ways to get ready for that moment. And so, you know, in 2006, which is about a decade ago, when my father passed away, I was there with my camera. I was like, and people are like, "Don't you think you should be doing it?" I was like, "This is my father's dying wish. He prepared me through the life, and I'm going to take photos of this really delicate private moment."
Yep. Yep. Well, and there's some of the old world traditions, they did that. They took pictures of people on their death.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
There's a book out there. I can't remember the title of it now. That's just pictures like from the turn of the 18th and 19th century or 19th to 20th century of all these dead children.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and which is, you know, there's a real cocktail book to have out on the table while you're entertaining friends. But, death was so much a part of life on an everyday basis that it was less, you know, it was less seen as this other thing out there. But that, you know, that idea of, you know, obsessing on death, though, Fausto, that's I mean,
I'm not kidding you. He would sing songs to us in the car that we're like, "Oh, that's a beautiful love song," you know. And then later on as an adult, I'm listening to the song and I'm like, "Her eyes closed, the moon stopped shining, the last breath fell from her mouth, and she is alive no more. I will never feel love anymore." You know, these are like songs that my father sang to us as kids. And so we were very comfortable with death and have always been very comfortable. So when I turned 18, it was easy for me to get involved in ACT UP and the AIDS crisis and, like, you know, being part of older gay men's lives who were passing away from AIDS, because I was like, no big deal, you know?
Well, yeah.
Sorry. My favorite thing about Fausto's father's funeral is he got when he got buried, he got buried in something called the Celestium, and it was these a monolithic dome. And he did get cremated, but before the cremation, they had his body on display behind in a glass coffin. And you would come over and
Snow White.
Like Snow White.
Yeah.
And there was this very dykey woman, and it was covered in lace, and she would pull back the lace curtain so you could look at the body. And then when she knew you were done, she'd nod at you, and then she'd put the lace back, and then she'd stand there, and then the next person would come over, and she'd slowly reveal. Like, it was so dramatic.
Peek-a-boo.
It was so peekaboo, dead body.
Oh my god. Mm-hmm. That I have never heard of anything like that.
Yeah, it's that freaky. We'll send you pictures. You want to see pictures of a dead man?
I have no problem with that. I've seen a few. I've conducted many a funeral in my day. Do you know who has good sense of humor about death? Our funeral directors. I kid you not. They have some of the best jokes. You're sitting there and you're trying to be really serious before the funeral, whatever, and one came up to me and says, "Doesn't she look nice?" And I said, "She does look really nice." He goes, "What's she out of? She just got out of the hospital." And, do I laugh or do I slap you? Which do I do?
My friends tried to fix me up with a guy in my hometown of Erie, Pennsylvania, who was a mortician, right? And he was an attractive looking guy. And I had no problems with that. But then we were out having a drink and he raised his hands and he had these long, bony fingers. And I couldn't. I was like, those are the bony fingers that touch dead bodies. I'm like, no, I can't do it.
So there's like the Grim Reaper.
It was like the Grim Reaper hands. Yeah. I couldn't believe it.
But with pecs.
He was an attractive guy, but the fingers were long and bony, and I was just like, this is not right.
Well, you know what they say about a man with long, bony fingers, don't you?
What do they say?
He's got...
It's one bone that matters.
That's true. Yes, I just choose to believe that. They say the same thing about men with short, stubby fingers. Whatever.
So when you're finding yourself, this is the first time in another country, in another land... And you're surrounded by all these 20-somethings, and they're like, "Oh my god, we're so excited! I'm gonna drink some." And you know, the people on Alt for Norca, I'll tell you, you and I were there at the party for season 9. Those people drink compulsively.
Oh, it's.
It's rough.
I could not do it. I mean, my group did the same thing. Well, two or three of them really were hard drinkers. And I just kind of looked at them and said, you know, my liver has already been awash in alcohol the years before. I don't need to do that anymore. And I couldn't believe why there was the need for that. It was like there was, you know, not like I want to diagnose them, but can you have a good time without being shit-faced? I mean, what's... Maybe not. I don't know. But it was a really strange thing. And there was this intentionality. It was like there was this drive. I must drink tonight. I must have more beer. Not like an addiction or whatever, but like something had a hold of a leash around their neck and was pulling them toward it. It was weird. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is alcohol is so damn expensive in Norway. So obviously, you know, they...
Oh, yeah. Like, if you wanted to go out, and let's say you just wanted to have beer, right?
Yeah.
And you went out, and you're like, you're a 5 or 6 beer kind of person.
5 or 6 beers?
Yeah.
That's rough. I could do 3.
Okay, so 3 beers. You're looking at $30 at least.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. You know? At least.
For 3 beers. You know,
good thing they have socialized health care there.
Well, that's part of the reason why they don't mind spending so much money on beers, because they're like, well, at least when I go to the doctor, that's kind of taken care of.
Yeah, well, who knows how that affects people's mindset. I mean, if you got one less thing to worry about, maybe you don't care that much about that type of thing. But I know what they do in Norway, too, is that they have home parties. They go to somebody's house, and they drink and get, you know, lubricated there.
Varsk? What's it called? They have a name for it.
Yeah, I don't know what the name is.
Varsk or Svesk for the pre-party? I don't know.
We'll just call it pre-party. Okay. Yeah. Please do research. Okay. Give me a report, 3 pages long, double spaced.
For that one word.
For that one word. Yeah, you know, I expect a dig into etymology here, and I'm not kidding. I was an English teacher, so there. But yeah, they would go out, and then they, after they're already drunk, then they go out to the bars afterwards. So.
Mm. And so for you, I imagine you had some expectations in going over there. And I would say that you strike me as a very healthy-minded person in the sense that if it doesn't match your expectations, not the end of the world. However, I got a sense from at least talking to the contestants from this season that they were all sort of traumatized by that experience. And I thought, well, maybe it's all for Norga. And no, because I was involved in Camp Wanakiki, and Mark and I and have interviewed people from, you know, Real World to RuPaul's Drag Race to Master Chef. And one thing they all share in common is that there's a bit of like resentment of having been on that show, and they're still having to go to work, having to brush their teeth. You know, they feel like mortals, and they were wanting to become immortals.
I don't know if this happened with you, Mark, or not, but they kept warning us, you're going to be going back to real life. You're going to go back to your real life. It's not going to be easy. You know, you're going to, and it's true, because for, you know, how long ever you were there, you know, you've got somebody who's taking care of your every need, and you're never left alone for 1 minute, practically. And it's a whole different kind of bubble that you're living in. And to come back here, and, you know, just kind of start living again can be kind of a challenge. But that's where I think being older is to your advantage. It's like, yeah, this is a passing thing. This was fun. This was a life-changing thing for me. I would never trade my time doing this for anything. And all it did was make my life back here that much better. It wasn't my entire life.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I heard a little difference between the folks in my season and the folks in Mark's season, because they sound a little more bitter and angry and a little more, I think, jaded or a little, you know, jilted, like jilted lovers to a certain extent.
You're saying season 9, Mark's season, the people come across as a little bit more bitter?
Yeah. Yeah, that's what
I'm
saying.
Is that the Trump generation, or is that what do you think? Is that just the cast change?
Has changed a little bit too, and some people are not happy with that because it's not.
Right.
You know, you guys all had those fabulous introductions. You had camera crews coming out and filming you in your daily life, and you know, making this little you know, your portrait, right?
Your pastiche.
Yeah. No, and yes. So we didn't have that, and I from whatever, like our season is cut down on time. It's only 40 minutes. You guys were like an hour and 5 minutes or something.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a big difference.
That's a huge difference. I did not realize all that. Yeah, and when you heard about something, how it existed in its previous iteration, and all of a sudden you're going, well, no, you're going to get something a little different. That's kind of a disappointment. Yeah.
You know, but for me, like coming back, it was like I was just physically exhausted. So it was like, it was hard, and I was so tired. So it was so good to be like home. But I was just like, I was good for nothing for a little while. And luckily, they kind of wanted us to stay off social media till July 1st. So I had a lot of time to kind of just be like down and not do much. But, you know, I mean, we got back. It was like Gay Pride was still happening. You know, 4th of July was right around the corner. It was just like, you know, the party just kept on going.
But speaking of Gay Pride, so I'm in Oslo, okay, after I won, everybody else had left, and I was waiting for the big finale show where I was going to meet my family, a Norwegian family, and it was Gay Pride in Oslo. So I'm walking around Gay Pride in Oslo, and I stop by this bear booth for some strange reason, but anyway,
Bjorn booth?
Bjorn booth, yeah. The Bjorners were everywhere. And this guy says to me, oh, you must be very excited. And I said, well, why? And I looked at my pants, and he says, no, not like that. But I said, well, yeah, he said the decision by the Supreme Court. And I went, what decision? Because, I mean, they kept us out of the loop. We didn't have the news on.
Yeah.
And it was when the decision had been made to grant you know, equal marriage rights to all people.
Mm.
And I freaked because it already existed in Minnesota. Greg and I got married in 2014 because it was legal here in Minnesota. But then it was national. It was surreal. It was just kind of being so out of the loop and not knowing what was going on in the rest of the world and have such fantastic news be delivered to me by a Norwegian. That was pretty, pretty interesting way of finding out.
I think most of Europe has some kind of gay marriage or at least civil union kind of thing.
They do. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they do. The churches have a lot of impact on that too. I mean, so I think that makes a big difference as well.
Which is today, you know, with Brent Kavanaugh, now God, you know, it's like if you try to pass marriage equality, the Supreme Court, that'll never happen.
Nope, not now. And there are going to be those that somebody who's running for attorney general here in Minnesota, is anti-gay. And can you imagine the nightmare they're going to create for themselves if they try to fight gay rights now and try to get us all divorced?
Well, that's part of the reason why they fight it, is just that it's not, it's just to keep us embattled, you know, to keep us busy, to keep us occupied. And that's why they try and pass these bathroom bills. A lot of them, they know they're not going to pass, or they know they're not going to hold up in court, but they know that they're just going to occupy our psyche so that they can actually do the really shitty things that they want to do. And we're not even paying attention.
Well, right. And the other thing they do too, is they like to keep their constituency, the ones that get most excited about their stuff, mm-hmm. are people who are perpetually angry and upset about something. They live in an emotional whitewater 100% of the time. Mm-hmm. And so what you do is you throw out this bone for them to get all, you know, it's what you see at a Trump rally. Mm-hmm. They're all going crazy, you know, because he gives them some fresh meat. He talks about something that, you know, I'm not sure he would believe himself, but he says it because he knows they're going to all of a sudden clutch their, you know, their pearls. Mm-hmm. But that's what they do. And that way they can, you know, then they can drum up more money. Whatever their need is. It's a control thing. And the people who think that they're so powerful by being angry are the ones that are being yanked around the most.
Mm. You know, that was one of the greatest gifts I think about going to Norway for All for Norge, is that there was all that time I spent away from the United States and away from Donald Trump. I remember Kelsey and I were sitting in the hotel and we see Donald Trump on the television, and it was the first time we had seen him in like a month, and we just looked at each other and we're like, and so it was, and when I came back, it was like, you know, we find out that there's, like, just before I came back, we're like, there's children in cages, and we're just like, oh, and I think it's so important for people. You know, we have to stay involved, we have to stay active, but at some point in time, you have to pull back, and you have to take care of yourself and do some self-care and stop, like, living in this 24-hour news cycle in some sense.
Absolutely. I had a professor in graduate school who was terrific, and he said that our lives are like a figure eight. And what we go into the streets and we fight for the justice, and we fight the battles for those that don't have the power. But then after a while, we have to get away from that and have some solidarity. We have to have some kind of recovery time where we can kind of get our strength back up. And then but we don't stay there. You go back into the street again to start working again. And I think that's something that people forget to do, that you got to take care of yourself in order so that you can fight for other people. This is a time when we are really going to have to be fighting hard, because there's the value system that has taken hold in the government in this country is I'm like a stranger in a strange land. I don't even recognize the government anymore, the way it functions.
Bernie Sanders is just talking about how we're now controlled by, you know, an international oligarchy.
Mm-hmm. Mark, like, in your season, you know, Alt for Norge is about Norwegian Americans retracing their origins in Norway, and they're not just Norwegian Americans, they're also Americans, right?
Yes.
And not all of them are Democrats. Some of them voted for Trump, for example. I'm not going to out which contestants of your season, Mark, were Republicans.
I never heard it from the horse's mouth. I heard it from somebody else.
I challenge, you know, I talked to them directly about that and, you know, poked gentle fun about it. But I imagine that a lot of the Norwegians that you guys came to face with were pretty shocked at the rise of fascism in the United States, considering Europe's own history with fascism.
But, you know, the right is on the rise in Europe as well, and so there's a lot of, you know, but they also have, you know, they've got some policies. They have they have more of a government. They're not subjected to these two parties like we are.
Sure.
No.
They have options, so I think that those options can kind of mitigate some of those problems.
They don't have a Fox News. They don't have a propaganda machine.
Well, Alt for Norge is a propaganda machine.
For diversity.
And we're mere puppets. We're just puppets in the hands of the puppets.
But I mean,
when David, you told me that, David, I was kind of like, I'm like, God, I'm glad I'm not North Korean, because part of me feels like I'm in some kind of like propaganda film. But at least, you know, Norway's a democracy, and they seem to care for their citizens. And
they do.
They don't have, the police aren't killing their citizens, you know.
David, Mark, did you guys ever get challenged or ask about fascism or Trump?
Oh, people ask us all about Trump all the time.
What did you guys say?
They were just, you know, they were saying, like, what's going on? Why would that happen? And you just kind of like, listen, we have a vocal minority, and they got out the vote, and it's super fucked up, and I don't like him, and most people I know don't like him. The majority of Americans don't like him, but here we are. America has, you know, racist problems, misogyny. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that's going on here. And of course, you know, now we're at the mercy of these international conglomerates. And
oh yeah, it's not good. I mean, it's a mess right now. It's truly a mess to assert your independence from that. You have to be really a single-minded individual to try to think for yourself and not get sucked into the vortex here. But try to explain the Electoral College to people that aren't American either. I mean, they just go, why would you have that? And that's a question I think that we have to be asking ourselves as well. Why do we have it? It doesn't make any sense. Norwegians, though, when the crew that I knew from when I was in the show in 2015, when Trump was winning, I was getting text messages from the crew saying, "Don't let Trump win! Don't let Trump win!" I'm going, "Well, okay, you know, my superpowers are a little bit."
I used them all to win my season. I don't have anything left.
I am spent, people. Do you think I have anything left for this election? No.
What did you do with the money?
What did I do with the money? Well, I first of all, I paid some bills and I bought some stuff for my kids and my grandkids because I'm just that pathetic, you know. But I also bought a bunad, a Norwegian folk costume bunad.
Is that the photo that we see of you on social media and stuff?
Aren't I darling? Aren't I just
you're
the sweetest
thing? You're so adorable.
Thing? Well, thank you. I look good in wool. That's all I got to say.
Did you have it made in Norway?
I did, actually, yes. The picture was that you see was one that was the same from the same region, the same one I own now, but it was borrowed for the show. But yeah, when I went back last year, 2 years ago now, I met up with somebody and I called them the Bunad Nazis because they are like, when they make you a Bunad from a specific region, you have to use these colors and this pattern and this hat. And if I would reach for something and say, well, what about this? No. That is not the Bunad that you can have. Mm-hmm. That's not the Bunad, whatever.
For people who are not familiar with Bunads, they're sort of like the folkloric costumes for each region, each town in Norway. Mm-hmm. So if you say, I really like the color green, like I think Matt from your season, Mark, he was heartbroken because they put him in a red bunad.
Yeah, he did.
And he's like, I look like Santa. And I'm like, Santa's good. Santa's sexy. You look like young Santa, you know? And he was like really mad that he looked like Santa Claus. And I'm like, this is something really cool. Mm-hmm. Like people will love you.
And one of the things they told us is they couldn't guarantee that we would be wearing the bunad, which is spelled B-U-N-A-D, by the way. They couldn't necessarily find a bunad for the region where our families lived, because they had to just kind of catch as catch can, get what they could as far as what would fit people. So,
I wore one from Oslo because my ancestor had emigrated from Oslo. She had lived there for a while, but she was originally from Hamar, right? And so Fausto shared my photo on social media going, it's Hamar time, you know? And somebody started reading him for filth, being like, that is not the bunad for Hamar. Da da da, it doesn't look like that.
And I'm like, hello, MC Hamar. Hello. Can't touch this. Oh my God, people have no sense of humor.
Do you see how they are about these things, though?
Tragedy.
Well, and somebody from our season, she was from the Nordlands. I don't want to say her name because she likes to remain anonymous on social media. She wore a green bunad, right? They gave her one because she's from the Nordlands. And then she discovered, though, that the people from the Nordlands, from the islands, actually wore a blue one. So she's all feeling like duped, like she got the wrong bunad.
Can we all just take a deep breath?
But people were really if you get a chance to talk to one of the Chase about it, the people in my season were like angry and pissed. They were like, if I don't get a bunad, I'm going to be really angry. And I'm just like, I don't, because I didn't grow up with bunad, so I didn't have like an emotional reaction to it. It wasn't my thing, because I didn't grow up like in a Norwegian town, a Norwegian city. My dad was, you know, part Norwegian. We had like some Norwegian food, and you know, he was a great guy, and that was about it.
Yeah. Well, you know, it sounds like I wonder if those people were on your season are really emotionally constipated or something. I mean, my God, reacting to every little thing. I mean, what do they think? They think they were on a cruise. What I told somebody when my season, I said, look, this. Well, they were going, why can't we do this? And why can't we do that? I said, we're not here for us. We're here for them. Mm-hmm. They are making money off of us. Mm-hmm. So we will do what they tell us to do. You are on a show. Not mm-hmm. because you're not here to tour.
It was amazing when super people were like, why do they have the cameras on us? I'm like, do you not understand that they're making a television show when they're going to film you 8-10 hours a day and use 3 minutes of it?
Right.
Yeah. We would have a lot more of your favorite reality TV show guests on this show, but they simply don't want to do interviews of their experience, period. Because they're fuming mad, thinking they were going to go on a luxurious, all-expenses-paid cruise to Los Angeles or, you know, this place or another. And then they realize, oh, my God, this is a job. I'm in front of a television camera. I have to talk. Mm-hmm. Even when I don't feel like talking, mm-hmm. I have to be on when I feel like taking a nap.
Oh, yeah. Well, Mark, you know, you said you were exhausted. There were days where, you know, I've got one nerve left and you're getting on it and I still have to be nice to you. You know, it was really, really hard at times, you know, sleeping on a straw floor one night and it was cold. That was really a lot of fun in my delicate little fragile body that I have. but you know, you don't, and you have to get up and be fresh and happy. And if you weren't fresh and happy, they took you aside and said, what can we do to beat you enough to make you fresh and happy? Because they just, they
beat you. Oh, you got to talk?
Well, I got a talking to one day. I got a talking to. I did. Yes.
What did you do to get scolded?
Well, David has a way of feeling sorry for himself. That's just, you know, it's a thing of beauty. It really is. It's, you know, when I go, poor me, I do it in, you know, bold letters. And so we were on this boat and I was sicker than a dog from a cold and fever. And I just said, oh, I can't do this anymore. I just want to go home. Well, somebody else on the crew was feeling that I was being a negative influence. And so I was taken aside by one of the women who took care of our needs and make sure we got where we were supposed to. And she says, David, nobody wants to hear that you want to go home when everybody else wants to stay.
Ooh.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess I'll get happy. All right. And it did help. It kind of helped. And she kind of, you know,
Did you have any like actory showbiz types? This is the other side of the coin. It's like, you know, people are trained in theater school, are told and drilled, smile even though your heart is breaking. The show must go on, break a leg. The whole, you know, the core of it all is if you feel like dying, that's when you're ready to go on stage.
Well, you know, you had to force it. That was the thing. You were doing it for the benefit. I mean, this is my mindset. I don't know what other people thought, but I just went, I'm doing this for the entertainment of the Norwegian people. I am not here just because I'm, you know, they're supposed to be taking care of me. That's not what it was about. And I like to entertain people. I like to make people laugh. And mm-hmm. It was a good time. But we had a few would-be actors in our group that were really, you know, and I could kind of tell when they were just sort of going over the edge with their behavior because they were overcompensating or something. And a few of them were irritating. I'm sure you found a few people irritating on your season too, but, and you had death wishes for them, but you know.
I wouldn't say it was quite like that.
You didn't have any bullies?
I did actually wish somebody, I told Isaac, I hope he drowns.
Because he was I was being
playful though, because he's like, oh, I hope the competition is we have to swim across the fjord and da da da. I'm like, well, I hope you drown. Because I was like, I'm not going to beat him. He's an ex like Navy SEAL trait, you know?
Well, right. Well, we had this one individual who shall remain nameless who was always just sort of on and she was always talking to sheep and she was always being a little miss, you know, she sounded like she was going to be like Snow White singing to the birds and everything and they were going to, you know, knit her a new outfit or something. But it was crazy. And one of the other people who was one of the nicest people who wouldn't say shit if she had a mouthful, that kind of person, as they say. So this other person is going on and doing her thing, and this other individual just says under her breath, oh, shut the fuck up. And it was a moment I will never forget. It was like, you said fuck. I cannot tell you how much this means to me.
That's amazing.
It was amazing. Very.
Is that something that made it on the air? Because Mark's elimination from last week had Cheyenne. When Mark made it,
when
she
I got
went,
through.
Fuck!
And it's just, oh, fuck. Yeah. Oh, fuck.
I saw that. Yeah. I saw that, yeah.
And we know enough of Cheyenne that I'm sure that she didn't mean it maliciously towards Mark.
I don't think it was. No. I don't necessarily think it was towards me. I think it was towards the situation, you know? Because now here it is, like, I went through. And Cheyenne and I, we had our difficulties and stuff, you know? And I made it through. And so she's, like, thinking to herself, okay, I want to make it through too, so it's going to be me and Mark going through, but I'm also very close to Evan and to Kirsten, mm-hmm. and by me, if I get this right, I know that I'm going to send those two home.
One of the fans of the show said the four people that she liked the most of the season were all up for elimination last episode.
Oh, really? Yeah, that's a tough one.
And I would argue that certainly, with you know, certainly, I think Kelsey too is pretty likable.
The core group, definitely.
The thing, though, too, is you have to remember is like the way these things are edited, so you know those two are going home, so they got a lot of camera time.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Right. And so people get that camera time and then they're gone.
Well, in the next episode, something unusual happens. Do you want to talk about it, Mark?
Oh, on the one that's coming up?
The upcoming episode?
I don't think I can.
Well, let's just say Mark gets a lot of air time. will happen?
We'll see.
But not in a, maybe, you know, it's not what you think.
I'm not up for elimination.
You're not up for elimination.
No, I'm not up for elimination. No, are you kidding? You watched this last episode.
So you're not. Right.
My team won.
But you get a lot of camera time.
Oh, that's right. So you're safe. That's right.
Yeah,
you're safe.
So I'm safe. I'm safe.
But Mark gets a lot of camera time.
How much did you like?
Not in a necessarily good way.
And not in a good way?
Not necessarily. Let's just put it that way.
Oh, well, this night, I've got to watch
the
it
The stakes are being raised. Mark's about to discover there's no place like home.
What did you think of this latest episode?
Oh, I loved it. Yeah. I thought it was so corny. It was fun. I mean, it was just right. Love you shirtless. I think you should have left the shirt off the whole time.
I think I've been shirtless on this show more than anybody else so far.
My husband is angry because I went up to the television and started licking the screen when you were on there at one point.
Yes, baby.
And I love the shirts because you can go fishing with them when you're not wearing them. I'm not talking about multi-purpose.
Well, I also like that they put them with former bodybuilders.
I know.
I was a little bit like, couldn't put them with current bodybuilders?
That would have been a little too much to ask.
I wanted to crank up that gay. And this is the weirdest thing about this season. No one knows Mark is gay yet. It hasn't been like everybody knows they have married, their kids, their boyfriend, No one knows Mark is gay, hosts a cooking show with drag queens, and is married to me. Like, that is the... So if they ever choose... Now they painted themselves into a corner, right? If they reveal it now, people are going to be like, oh my God, you're exploding it. Or...
Well, he did say...
It's weird.
He did comment about, this looks like something you would buy in a gay man would own in the 90s.
But that's not identifying himself. No. He's talking about it in a third person.
No, but how many straight men know what kind of shirts you buy in the 90s?
Was I wrong about those shirts, though?
No, you were not wrong about those shirts at all.
That's from International Mail Catalog, and I'm sure you and I probably bought one. And and when we tried it on, it did not look like the model. And we put it in our drawer.
No, I had one, but I would have had one, I should say, but they didn't make them for big girls. So I didn't go for that. Mm. Plus, my nipples would have poked through the holes, so it would have been embarrassing.
But do you feel, David, that Mark's sexuality is being used as sort of it's being exploited to some degree, or being sort of used as a peekaboo or as a big reveal or surprise in this season?
Well, it's erasure, isn't it?
We knew David was gay from the get-go very early on in his season.
Oh, yeah. I said that right from the start in my intro.
Whereas we don't know how they're going to reveal that, if they're even going to reveal it at all.
My guess is they'll probably have a little shot of maybe something along the lines from our YouTube station. Maybe something from Cooking with Drag. That's my guess.
I don't know.
We'll see.
But they've painted themselves in a corner.
Well, I don't.
The fans, those are Norwegians. They may be nice, but you don't want to piss them off.
But also, too, they might want people to get to know me and then be like, oh, and look what else happens.
Well, do you feel this is a situation where they're, if they knew Mark was gay, they wouldn't like him as much?
No, it has nothing to do with it. There's been so many gay people on this on the shows before, mm-hmm. that we had nothing to do with it. And Mark is actually surprisingly enough likable. So, you know, that should we just be frosting on the cake as far as I'm concerned.
Well, one of the Norwegians I was talking to, she goes, well, every season, it's in many ways, it's kind of the same. There's always just, you know, the funny person. There's the pretty girl. There's the asshole. There's the gay person. And there's like, which one are you? I'm like, I'm all of those. She really appreciated that. Doubt, looking at when we did our floats, did you have any doubt when we met our floats that my team was going to win?
Well, say again that. When we
had this competition in the last competition, because I'm kind of confused. Like, did you have any doubts that my team wasn't going to win?
No. Actually, I didn't. Actually, I did.
Because I like Chase, like he just shared something on Facebook, being like, "I had my doubts how this would go down," and I'm like, I kept looking at our float, going like, "This is amazing." All the guys kept going over to us like, "This is amazing. You guys are totally going to win tomorrow."
And well, then Mark's the float Norwegians was like low budget Disney, mm-hmm. and the competing team was low budget Sanford and Son. And you know, I love Sanford and Son, but Disney always wins.
The Norwegians are always like, it was very close, it was very close, and I'm just like, are you guys blind? Like, it's not close at all. There's no way it's close. I don't know, maybe I'm just,
but that's very un-Norwegian like to boast to about that. How well you did, although yeah. they're certainly not shy about bragging about their Olympic medals. And every other episode is like, this guy's an Olympic winner, blah, 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 blah.
Well,
Jorgen Smorgasford. And he's like, how you doing, kids? We're going to build a fire today.
Well, it sounds like an old musical. Hey, kids, let's put on a show. And here's a bunch of junk, and we're going to put it all together to make it.
Mm-hmm. And well, then, like, luckily for them, they had people to help them put that stuff together.
Well, right. I mean, that was assuming an awful lot. I mean, like welding, pounding things together. I mean, you guys did. It was pretty creative to come up with those ideas that you did. Mm. And I was so thrilled that you made the turtle, even though we made fun of you, because I've been taking a Norwegian language thing on an application on my phone, and I just learned the word skilpadda, which is turtle. So I was really thrilled. Well, it made my night.
Originally, the turtle was going to be a gong, and I was going to hit the gong, but it didn't really make much sound. I was just like, I'm going to make it into a turtle. Like, you know, turtles aren't Norwegian. They're not native to Norway. I'm like, yeah, because you probably all ate them in the prehistoric times or something like that.
Well, what do they have? They had ate with this white glue made out of, you know, wheat flour and water. Anything is going to start to look good after a few days of that.
But then also too, I remember Babette's Feast. They had a big turtle, you know,
yes, from the movie.
And,
yes.
So I just made the turtle because it was fit. So I was just, you know, I was trying to sell it. It was like direct from the Amazon. But you know, they can't hear what you're saying when you're up on that float, you know.
No. But remember now, Babette was French.
Yes.
Babette was French.
She was in Denmark, right?
Right, she was, but she had gone back to France to get all the makings for this big meal, and she brought the turtle back with her.
Well, I am French-Canadian, you know that, right?
I did not know that.
Now you know.
Mark's got, if you got a culture, Mark's got it.
Yeah, I'm also Swedish and Danish.
Well, my God, man, you're the UN.
Yeah. And sexually speaking, too. But no, the thing about it is that I thought was really sexy was all these hot, athletic men pulling the floats and ropes.
I know.
What? We haven't even talked about that.
I felt like Liz Taylor and Cleopatra.
Really?
Coming into Rome.
Actually, what I thought of is that you were pounding on that barrel reminded me of something out of Ben-Hur. Rabbing speed. Boom.
I was trying to make noise with it. Boom, boom, boom.
That was very Ben-Hur.
Yeah.
It was. It was very Ben-Hur.
Yeah. It had a very golden Hollywood aesthetic for such a low budget production.
Well, but this is the essence of creativity, taking something simple and turning it into something amazing. Mm. And that's what you did. by virtue of your fishnet shirt.
Well, you can imagine, like, when I walked in, like, when I came up and I said all these men wearing the same outfits, but, like, what is happening?
Oh, it's a cult. We're at a cult meeting. What kind of indoctrination am I going to have to go through to join this group?
You know, I felt like a lot of the hunks that they've had on the show so far have been a little underwhelming. So it was nice having, you know, some grade A beefcake.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It was daddy time last episode. It was Major League Daddy time, I tell ya.
There is Mae West would say, I love what the Nets caught. You got to show me your fishing techniques.
By the way, the word for the Norwegian pre-part is comes from the German Vorspiel.
Vorspiel. Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, interesting. Oh,
yeah. I mean, that's it was Vors something. I think that they even shortened it to just divorce. I don't
know. Vors, probably.
Yeah.
Hey, did you do anything with Roos when you were in Norway?
We ran with the Roos kids in the set to My Parade.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, I saw that.
That's yeah, awesome. And that was about it. You know.
Oh, man, it was so nuts when we were there. This big bus, they get these Roos buses.
Explain to the listeners what Roos is.
Roos is a thing in Norway. It's really bizarre. When they graduate, just before they graduate, before they take their final tests, and they do high school differently, different kind of like trade schools and different focus of interests in their high schools. And so they all have like different like uniforms. And they before they take their big tests, they basically go out and they have this big drunk and debauchery festival. It's like get all your yayas worked out of your system, kids. And then when you're totally shit faced, now take your finals. It makes no sense to me at all. But so this big bus pulls up to where we were staying at the time, and it's like early in the morning. And so they drag us over to the bus, and we're drinking warm beer at like 7 o'clock in the morning. And this kid has got he's wearing these red coveralls, and he's got this pine cone dangling from his jacket he was wearing. And somebody says, do you know what that means? I said, yes, it means he screwed somebody under a pine tree. And he goes, that's right, that's what it means. Yeah! I love Norway!
Because they have a bunch of challenges they're supposed to do, right? Because they made international news, they were asking students, please do not have sex in the roundabouts.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, because I guess they were causing accidents and whatnot.
Well, no kidding. You got to stop and watch that. You know, how many times are people going around the roundabout before they were all done?
And, Mark is going around to the producers and like, where exactly are these roundabouts? Just want to know.
I have this cultural need to know.
Well, there's a whole, industry around Roos. We were walking around Bergen and some guy comes up to us and like he presents his card as like he's like a Roos like person. You can rent a bus to him. He can tell you how to do it and whatnot, all this kind of stuff. I don't know why he was doing it to us because like, none of us look like we're ready for Roos. But he had his cards like stored into his pants. So he literally dug into like the top of his pants, like his crotch. And we're like, I got excited. I was like, what's going to happen? And then he pulls out, it was like a business card, and I was just like, oh, garbage.
Was it a scratch and sniff business card, Mark?
Let's just say the card was sticky.
Ew.
In a good way, in a good way.
Okay, then that's fine.
After you won, you went back to Norway.
Did go back.
Like, how soon after? Were you, like, excited to go back, or did you take your time, or what was the circumstances?
It was a year afterwards. I went back again and I wanted to be a tourist, I wanted to meet people again that I had met before and spend some time without a camera in your face. Because it's fun, but it's exhausting, and I make it a little bit more leisurely. So, Greg, my husband, and I went back, and we did a tour on a cruise line called Hurtigruten, and which is basically a mail ferry system back from the old days. They've turned now into a cruise line that goes up totally at the coast until we stopped in a town called Herkenes, which is right next to Russia. And that was great. It was more like a floating nursing home than anything else, but
there was nobody young on the boat.
No, God, no. Oh, hell no. I felt young in the boat. What does that tell you? I mean, everybody would get up and shuffle off to breakfast, and they would shuffle back to their rooms, and the bell would ring, and they'd shuffle off for lunch. So it was just, and there was beautiful scenery, of course, all along the way there. Mm-hmm. But I loved going back. It was fun to go back and see the crew and talk with them and just relax with them. Evelina from the TV station had bought all kinds of liquor and food for us to sit there in the bar and drink and eat and talk and laugh. And it was just so different. You know, there wasn't some big agenda. Everybody was just having a good time. And that's when I got my Bunad, and that's why I spent more time with my relatives from Norway too. Mm.
Was it hard emotionally? Because you were at one point in time in your life married to a woman with kids.
Right.
You are a minister, a Lutheran minister. And your life today is so different. You're married to a man.
You're no longer a practicing minister.
Minister. You're in touch with the universe, but you know you're not preaching from a specific religious text to people.
No. Was that hard? Is that what your question is?
I imagine that a lot of the feelings of being over there in Norway and sort of getting in touch with your relatives made you just kind of like look at the complexity of your own life and the sacrifices you've made.
That's really insightful of you, because that was one of the things that happened to me over there, was just looking at the kind of whole history of my life. I was looking backwards at, you know, what it took for my family to dare to get on a ship and cross over. And that family from the farm that I visited, they all nearly died at sea because a big storm came and almost sunk their ship. They had to turn around and go back to Ireland for several weeks to fix the boat before they finally made it to the United States. And so focusing on that amazing story about just people saying, I need to do this to have a better life. I need to create something new for myself and for those that I love. And I thought, you know, in my own way, it may sound a bit dramatic, you know, but I had to take my own voyage. I had to do a lot of things so that I was happier and healthier and could feel more free to love the people I needed to love and be loved by. So there was a lot, kind of an interesting sort of melding of the present and the past there, just the risks that we have to take. It's hard work to be happy. It's hard work to feel like you're following, you know, what you need to do. It takes a lot of courage to do it. And, you know, I had the courage to go and be on the show because honestly, Mark, I mean, you know, it's hard work to do this. It looks like it's a lot of fun, but it's hard work and you're putting yourself out there every day on the show. But it was hard, you know, it was hard work to come to the truth about myself as well. And anything worth doing is going to take an awful lot of work, I think.
Why were you able to cross that threshold in your life?
How was I?
Yeah.
I was so depressed. I was almost suicidal. I was very close to ending my life. And I remember the day when I thought I knew how I would do it. And then the image of my own children came to mind. And that's when I thought, I can't do this, you know, as much pain as I'm in, I can't leave a legacy of pain for my children. I had no idea where it was going to go. I had no idea that things would be as good as they are right now, because I have a fantastic relationship with my kids. But at the time, it seemed like it was nothing but pain, just nothing but pain. And I was a source of pain for them. And just for myself, you know, as I'm trying to come to terms with who I really am. But, you know, it was worth it. I would not be in the happy position I am now if I hadn't taken those risks.
What was it like coming out to your kids?
That was a wild experience. My daughter figured it out before I said anything to her. I was living with a friend who had a boyfriend at the time, and Karen would come over there to visit, and she saw the pictures like of my friend Gordon and his boyfriend together. And Karen, one night after we had had dinner together and spent the weekend together, I was taking her home. She goes, Dad, if you were gay, you'd still be okay, wouldn't it? And I looked at her and I said, oh, honey, nothing's going to change how much I love you, no matter what. And then her next thing was, you're not going to get AIDS, are you, Dad? And, oh, my God. I mean, look at your baby in the face and, you know, who's begging you not to die, begging you not to go away. You know, it was a pretty emotional experience, a very emotional experience. My son was younger, and when I told him, he goes, well, what am I going to tell my friends? And I said, well, honey, you can tell them whatever you want to. You don't have to tell them at all if you don't want to. He goes, oh, okay. Can I go play now?
Oh, so they were little.
They were little, yeah.
Okay.
So next time someone says, I'm worried that you're going to die of AIDS, you say, oh, honey, don't worry. I'm on PrEP.
Not a problem. Well, I couldn't say that back in my day.
So we're going, now you can.
So because your kids are adults now.
Yeah, my daughter's 34 and my son's 30.
Oh, okay. So this is like the 80s, 90s.
Yeah, this was like 1993. Yeah.
Okay. When people were it was still the height of the AIDS crisis.
Oh, absolutely was. Yeah. There was just no.
So you can understand why a child would be afraid of something like that.
Totally. My parents, too. When I came up to my mom and dad, they were terrified that, because I started crying when I told them, and my dad was thinking, next thing I was going to say is, I'm HIV positive, or I'm dying, or something like that. But I am here today, and my God, I am fabulous.
Amen.
Amen to that.
David, it's such a treasure to have met you in person.
Thank you. That's such a sweet thing to say. I feel the same about you guys. What a gift. I mean, I love the surprises that every little story in our life brings us. Mm. You guys are just creative, wonderful, fun, sexy, oh so cute. You know,
go on.
I will. Trust me, I will.
But, you know, that's part of the reason, like, we wanted to go to, you know, Minnesota and sort of meet other contestants from the past seasons is because we're really, of all the people from Alt for Norge, we're probably think you're the best and really think you're a real star and feel like you have so much more to show the world. I feel like we just scratched the surface today with you.
Oh, well, thank you. That is a very kind thing to say. All I can say is I've never been happier in my entire life, and I'm very happy to tell that to people. And I just think that's the most, to feel like you're in the right place in the right time and doing with people that you're surrounded by that love you. And I'm sure you two have that experience as well. You're doing what you love. You have each other. I mean, it doesn't get much better than that.
Oh, honey, every time it's like, as Arnold Schwarzenegger says, I'm coming on stage, I'm coming at the gym, I'm coming at home. It's great. But one of the things that I want you guys' insight on is that we are living in very difficult, regressive times.
Yeah.
How do we make the United States more like the good aspects of Norway?
I think that's coming. I think the United States is an adolescent as a country. When you look at the countries in Europe, they've been around for a very, very long time. They have been through what we might be going through right now. And we're also a country that is, has the mindset that we can't do anything wrong, that everything that has the United States label on it is perfect. And if any nation is just like any individual who believes that they can't fail, is in a lot of trouble. They're in a lot of trouble. And I think one of the best things that could happen is if we got a little humility and realized just, you know, how much we're being lied to by some of these people, that we are willing to say that not everything the United States has done or is doing is perfect. I think we need to allow ourselves to take a good look at ourselves. Now, the people that are in power right now have no interest in self-examination. None. That because self-examination would reveal way too much about themselves, and they couldn't handle it. They would implode. So the only thing you can really do is to get rid of them, get rid of the disease, make them leave office and put them in positions where they're not able to do damage. It's like a disease, you know, some people, like some mental health conditions, some people you try to help, and they're so predisposed to self-destruction, there is no fix.
What kind of job would you like to Melania Trump to have once she's out of jail and being rehabilitated?
I think I'd like Melania to design hats, because what she's been wearing these last couple of years are just stunning, especially her little outfit she was wearing now in Egypt.
Oh, you like her colonialist outfit?
No, the she looked like the villain from Raiders of the Lost Ark. Right?
She did. Yeah. Was she wearing jodhpurs? Come on, tell me she was wearing jodhpurs.
I'm not sure she was. I didn't
for,
know
for people
who
haven't
bottom.
Seen it, she literally looks like the evil Nazi. Almost the same yes. outfit. This almost. White coat, white hat, strange long thin black necktie, and she has the Sphinx in the background. And she all she needs to say is like, "There is the Ark, Dr. Jones."
Well, I was, and her face would melt in that heat. So there would it would be the full circle at that point.
Oh, I don't care. Do you?
No, I don't care. I just don't.
That's her message to the world. Is she's like Cartman from South Park.
Oh yeah, yeah. She's a caricature. There's nothing. I mean, there's nothing real about her persona whatsoever. And the same is true for Trump.
Yeah.
You know, they're a mental health clinic in themselves. I mean, if anybody started working with them, they'd have their life taken care of right there, just in getting the co-pays and dealing with those two and their craziness.
I've been trying to get people to vote. So if you go to our social media, Feast of Fun on Instagram or my Facebook page, I'm posting very risque photos that are still legal within the parameters of the social net websites of me naked, sweaty, right after a workout.
Any
at the gym.
Imprints?
I'm trying to show as much as I can without getting the Facebook, Instagram.
Because you don't want to get banned for 30 days.
Yeah. So I'm just like, I'm really pushing it. But the idea is that I want people to go vote, to register for vote. In a lot of municipalities and a lot of places, October 6th was the last day to register. But there's a lot of other places in the country that are still, it's not too late to register to vote. So please go register.
Voting is the most critical thing that we could do as people of a democracy, and to not vote is one of the most irresponsible things you could ever do. And when we're living in the times that we are right now, to not vote essentially says you're okay with kids being in cages, you're okay with our water being dirty and our skies filthy, you're okay with any number of things being done to humanity if you choose not to vote. People get all bent out of shape if you accuse them of that kind of stuff, but that is the truth.
You know, one thing that's alarming is in the past 20 years in Norway, voter turnout has dropped and is now at a dangerous 60%. Which is, you know, 60% for Norway is really low. For example, to compare, Sweden is at 81% turnout.
Well, what's going on? I mean, I think this message of it doesn't make any difference whether you vote or not has been propagated and pushed, and people believe it. People are more interested in bread and circuses than they are in having anything to say about who's going to govern their country and what kind of policies are going to be made into law.
I think the X on the Beach series needs to get canceled in order to get voter turnout.
I don't know if you've seen that.
I have not seen that.
That's a competing episode on, and if you guys want to watch Alt for Norge, it is available to Americans on computers, not on mobile devices. You have to go to dplay.no and then search for Alt for Norge. And then it's going to say a lot of things in Norwegian that don't make any sense. Just click yes to all of them and you can watch it all. Just make sure your ad blocker on your browser is turned off.
Yeah, it's worth watching. I mean, it's obviously the show is in Norwegian except for when we talk, but it's pretty easy to figure out what we have to do and what's going on there. So, and they did get my best side whenever they filmed me, which has made me the happiest.
David, will you please come back on the show as much and as soon as possible? We absolutely love you.
And do come visit us in Chicago.
I will. Absolutely. It's going to happen. Do you have an extra bedroom?
Yeah, you guys can stay with us for sure.
Or how I'll big is sleep. Your bed?
I'll just sleep on the floor.
We have two bedrooms here. You can have one of them.
Well, you're too good to me. All right. It's a deal.
Yeah, okay. Come on down, girl. You're on The Price is Right.
Oh, I'm so excited. I had no idea.
Just make sure you bet $1.
Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah, whatever. Fausto, I do whatever I'm told. You know that.
We'll take you to the stripper bar down the street where this really hot guy from our gym strips. We found out. He spends the rest of his nights at this gay stripper bar, really enjoying having money put into his pants. But who doesn't, you know?
Well, come on. That's any good red-blooded American boy has been wanting somebody to put money in his pants. That's
for
just
sure.
it's a hobby.
Well, David, thank you for coming on the podcast, and I hate to cut this short.
No.
But we have to go film something now. So
okay, well, you guys do that. Thank you so much. It's been wonderful.
Thank you so much for coming on the podcast, and I really enjoyed your season. I'm going to actually finish watching it shortly.
Have a good night.
Thank you, David.
Take care, David.
You too. Bye-bye.
David Engen lives in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
You can watch Alt for Norga on dplay.no. It's supposed to be available only to Norwegian people, but Americans can watch it through a web browser. Just make sure your ad blocker's turned off and just answer yes to all the... What is yes in Norway? Norwegian?
Yeah.
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 Yeah. You say yeah. Yeah. And you can watch all of Mark's season and see Mark being tortured, made to eat fish guts and all sorts of
weird stuff.
Weird stuff.
I think one of the people told me that they went to watch it and he could only watch the latest episode. I think you might need to make an account if you're going to go back to back seasons, but I don't know. That might be his experience.
Hey, man. You know, I hope that you win this season, baby. I'm rooting for you.
I'm glad you're rooting for me. And you can maybe watch along with everybody else.
Maybe something horrible will happen next. Really, you got to watch next week, folks. If you haven't been tuning in, this is the make or break moment. This is where Mark loses his shit and says, I've had enough. I may be Norwegian American, but I'm also an American, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Okay.
That's probably an exaggeration.
I want to remind folks that we can't do this podcast without your support. So if you're not a Plus member yet, sign up today at feastoffun.com/plus. If you maybe you'd like to make a one-time donation, you can do that at feastoffun.com/donate.
Dutch marks or kroners or dollars.
Yeah, we accept kroners.
American Express will do nicely, thank you.
Maybe you watched the latest
episode. Let me loosen up your collar. Tell me, you want me to talk about the Feast of Fun story again?
Or maybe you saw my Not Shaving Gives Me More Time for Misbehaving t-shirt on the latest episode of Alt for Norga. I wore it. And you can get that t-shirt on our website, feastoffun.com/store.
And of course, listen, if you want me to stand outside of the house in my underwear and put dollars into it, I'm more than happy to do so. But, you know, it's a limited time offer. Guys, thanks for listening. Bye-bye.